yet again another month of scientific discoveries to report. It thankfully never stops, so here are 10 interesting scientific discoveries for July of 2024. Number 10. The oldest known incidence of cancer treatment. When we think of diseases like cancer, we tend to think of it in the modern sense, unfortunately imperfect treatability. When we think of the distant past, it's much worse. Any attempted treatment at all becomes difficult to envision for most past human cultures. But that's actually not the case. There are instances found in the archaeological record that seem to suggest that doctors in the past were trying to treat the disease in the only ways they knew how. The date of this is now pushed back, however, to ancient Egypt. The ancient Egyptians had surprisingly advanced medical science for their time, with evidence showing that they treated a number of diseases to varying degrees of success. This is a story of two skulls, one from a woman around age 50 when she died, somewhere around the 600s and 300s BC, the other much older, a man about 30 or so when he died, between 2687 and 2345 BC. Both skulls show evidence of bone damage consistent with cancerous tumors. The female's lesions are consistent with osteosarcoma, a bone cancer, and interestingly also showed evidence of apparently successfully treated traumatic injuries, above and beyond the cancer from earlier in life. The male skull shows what was probably metastasized throat cancer. Both skulls under close examination, however, showed evidence of surgical tools having been used, and indicate some kind of surgical intervention on the part of the ancient Egyptian doctors. Though it's unclear whether the marks happened while these people were alive, or if for some reason it was done after death. If it does represent a medical intervention, then it shows a precursor to modern cancer surgeries, and some understanding of cancer, though the Egyptians probably could not have differentiated cancer from other conditions that show similar symptoms. Indeed, they had no specific word for cancer, they just had words for swelling and tumors in general. Number 9. The Extinction Genome Fern. The human genome is enormous. If you printed it out in book form, it would come to over 200 thick volumes of information. But it's possible to have an even larger one, and a fern native to New Caledonia and Vanuatu in the Pacific now holds a record. This plant has 321 billion base pairs in its DNA, and would fill 11,000 books compared to a human's few hundred. If you arranged the genome in a line, it would stretch over 100 meters, and the whole thing seems to have been accidental. Apparently, the fern over time had no effective way to control transposon growth, when left unchecked, resulting in an ever-increasingly large genome full of excess DNA. Most organisms evolved a way to suppress this, but this fern does not appear to have done it. This is actually a serious problem for this plant because whenever a cell divides, it has to replicate that huge amount of DNA, which increasingly slows the cell's ability to replicate at all. That usually would result in extinction eventually, but this fern seems to have escaped it, at least for now, by living in an area where there's not much competition in its niche. How long the species will hold out is anyone's guess. Number 8. Frosted Martian Volcanoes. Mars still has water, usually in the form of frozen subsurface deposits and visible deposits at its polar caps, but now there is evidence for water in another area of Mars, the tops of its highest volcanoes. The area is the formerly very volcanically active Tarsus region on Mars, where its tallest volcano, Olympus Mons, is located. Researchers have recently found evidence of deposits of water ice frost near the summits of some of these volcanoes, but it's very situational. The frost appears to only form in the mornings on Mars, and then only in the depths of the Martian winter. They were able to rule out frozen carbon dioxide, which can look very much like water frost, due to the temperature being too high for it, leaving water as the only possibility. The bluish frost must be coming from the atmosphere, rather than outgassing from the volcanoes, or it would appear year-round, but it doesn't, it's seasonal. This may help solve a long-standing mystery in that it's been known for a while that water from the caps does end up in the atmosphere, but what was unclear was where it was going. It may simply be frosting the mountaintops of Mars. Number 7. the fungus that can eat plastic. It's no secret that we make a lot of plastic, and a lot of that plastic ends up in the ocean. And there it floats, sometimes in great vortexes, until it ends up shattering into microplastics. What to do about it has been an open question with a lot of ideas for solutions. But the one thing that wasn't expected was to find a natural organism eating the plastic. A marine fungus known as Peringiodontium album has actually been found in the North Pacific to be colonizing and eating plastic. And it's one of the environmentally worst plastics we have, because it's the most abundant one that ends up in the ocean, polyethylene. What allows this is ultraviolet light exposure. The plastic becomes exposed to UV from the sun, and that causes chemical changes that make it digestible to the fungus. While the process does produce a small amount of carbon dioxide, it's not that much. But it is not effective on plastics that sink to the ocean floor and do not get exposed to enough UV. Introducing the fungus to areas where it's not native is not desirable, but it does give a pathway to get rid of polyethylene that otherwise can't be recycled. This organism, however, is not the first known that can digest plastics. There are others, opening a new way to get a hold on dealing with the enormous amounts of plastics we generate. Number 6. Triton and Pluto may be siblings. Neptune's moon Triton is very strange. It orbits in the opposite direction of Neptune's rotation, the only large moon in the solar system that does so. Normally, moons that form alongside their planets would not do this, suggesting that Triton is a captured object. Moreover, recent work has shown that Triton and Pluto share a lot of commonalities in their makeup, to the point that it seems to indicate that they formed in the same area of the solar nebula, originally close to each other, though Triton is actually considerably more massive than Pluto. Where that formation point was is unknown, but it's not likely to have been in the Kuiper Belt. It's thought that it would either have been closer or further out, but still out past the orbit of Jupiter. The makeup of both worlds shows similar amounts of nitrogen, methane, and carbon dioxide that might indicate a formation point in the outer regions of the original solar nebula, which would have been a cold region rich in nitrogen. There are also known comets that match the general ratios of their composition, suggesting that some comets also originated in that area. How Pluto ended up where it is, and when and how Triton ended up orbiting Neptune is unclear, but it will be interesting to contrast their compositions with other Kuiper Belt objects as we study them in more depth. Number 5. The largest goose that ever lived. Australia is well known for its current array of interesting fauna, but it's always been like that, even in prehistory. Once thought to be the ancestor of the emus, the Australian Thunderbird fossils represent very large birds that stood over 2.5 meters tall and weighed upwards of 230 kilograms for the species Genyornis newtoni, of which a particularly well-preserved skull exists that was found in 1913. Other members of the family were even larger, with one species weighing in at over 600 kilograms. It turns out that these were not land birds, like the emu and ostrich, however, but in fact were waterfowl, recategorizing them as anseriforms, or, well, gigantic geese. While most of the Thunderbirds were extinct by the time humans arrived in Australia about 65,000 years ago, there were a few species that persisted alongside humans for a few tens of thousands of years. Examination of the skull shows a kinship with a type of waterfowl called a South American screamer. You can imagine how they got their name. Which is actually important for another reason, because the fossil record for the screamers is actually somewhat sparse in comparison to other birds. The giant thunder geese, see what I did there, were probably not particularly friendly. A 600 kilogram angry screaming goose is not something I would want to be running from. But overall, it's very likely that they were omnivores with a strong bent towards vegetation, as most modern geese. Number 4. The world's oldest preserved wine. Wine gets better with age, at least most wines, but there is a limit. Eventually it can turn into vinegar or otherwise lose its desirable qualities. This particular find is being touted as the world's oldest existing wine in liquid form, but that may not be correct. In this case, wine was found in an approximately 1st century Roman mausoleum in Spain, inside a sealed glass vessel containing the remains of a man in his mid-40s of high status. the vessel was sealed in lead, and that seems to have preserved about 5 liters of liquid, which turned out to be wine, and was meant to give the deceased something to drink on the way to the afterlife. It turns out that the wine's composition is that of a white wine, and it's actually not all that different from wines still produced in Spain today. The wine is now in a decomposed state with a reddish hue, but originally it was white. But it probably isn't the oldest wine ever found. There are a number of candidates, including one found by Jacques Cousteau, that dates from the earlier Greek period about 2200 years ago. And I've always heard that he and his crew tasted it, but I have never been able to confirm that they actually did. If anyone in the audience knows if that actually happened, drop a comment. Number 3. A new theoretical kind of atom. Just when you thought we knew a lot about atoms, it turns out we may not. The periodic table of the elements is a thing of beauty, and not only allows us to classify the atoms, it also predicts ones at the very top of the table that we have not yet synthesized, and gives us some insight as to what those atoms might be like. And an even more interesting possibility that far up the table exists an island of stability, where very heavy atoms might exist that don't almost instantly decay. But those are normal atoms. There are other types possible, and there's been some thinking lately that an atom might be created in a completely exotic way from what we know. Known as tauonium, this theoretical atom would not have a nucleus or electrons. It would instead be made up of a negatively charged tau lepton and its antiparticle, the anti-tau. So the tau lepton is a sort of cousin of the electron in some ways, but it's much more massive, about 3,500 times, exceeding the proton itself in weight. We know that exotic atoms exist. In the 1950s, an atom known as positronium was discovered that consists of a positron and an electron in a similar orbiting configuration, and there have since been a number of others synthesized or hypothesized. Tauonium could be looked for in a particle collider specializing in tau leptons, something China and Russia have expressed interest in building in the future, adding yet another exotic atom to the list. Look for a deep dive on all types of exotic atoms on this channel in the not-too-distant future. Number 2. Quantum superbehavior. The quantum world is strange and counterintuitive. It's nebulous, and often depicts an aspect of the universe that bears little resemblance to our level of the universe. This has recently become even stranger in that the quantum realm may allow for a group of low-energy quantum states to be combined, that is orders of magnitude more energetic than its individual components. The key here is the wave nature of basically everything. Under the right conditions, all objects can be viewed in quantum mechanics as a wave. Hidden in that are some very bizarre implications, in that quantum states with very little energy can combine into a state that has a lot of energy. This goes back to work done in the 1990s that showed that super oscillations can occur in a wave that can be broken down into individual waves within the wave, all vibrating at different frequencies. The researchers found that if you look at one tiny segment of the main wave, occasionally it would vibrate more energetically than the sum of its parts should allow, making it add up to more energy than the overall wave itself produces. This had weird effects. For example, looking at a low energy wave of light, infrared, when they zoomed in on it, it had areas so energetic that it appeared blue. The recent work shows that this is also applicable to quantum states, where a group of low energy states can combine and have a region of very high energy. This may seem like a curiosity, but understanding more about this effect could ultimately lead to new ways to construct better imaging devices, potentially in medicine. Number 1. Many black holes and unraveling dark matter. There has been much talk as of late about the concept of primordial black holes, or tiny black holes formed at the beginning of the universe, that may or may not have persisted to this day. If they are still around and haven't evaporated, they represent one of the major potential explanations for dark matter in the universe. The problem is, if they are dark matter, and consist of 70% of the matter in the universe, they are almost impossible, though not completely, to detect. But there may be a catch. There may be several types of primordial black hole. This involves a newly envisioned primordial black hole type related to a phenomenon known as color change, and it's an attribute of fundamental particles, gluons, and quarks. It's something like an electrical charge, but different in that there are three charges instead of two, red, green, and blue. But that's a misnomer because it doesn't really have anything to do with color, it's just a name. The different color charges attract each other and form charge-neutral objects, the only type nature apparently allows. A proton, for example, is made of one quark of each color and ends up with no color charge. At this stage in the universe, there are no free quarks or gluons. They're all bound up in charge-neutral particles. But at the very earliest moments of the universe, this was not so, and the quarks and gluons of different charges were congregated in a patchy manner. And that might have provided the mechanism for primordial black holes to form. Because of the patchy nature of this period, we're talking the first 100,000th of a second after the Big Bang, primordial black holes might have formed that were actually charged for lack of other available charges. This particular type of charged primordial black hole would not have lasted long. They'd have evaporated almost instantly, and almost all of them would have been gone within 1 second of the Big Bang, which in turn might have affected the ratios of the elements formed in the early universe, an open mystery. And if so, some fingerprint of that might still be weakly detectable. If so, then an entire new class of extinct black hole will be known, and it may well shed more light on the nature of dark matter, or make it more mysterious than it already is. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently eyeing the 600-kilogram goose fossil suspiciously. I do not have a good track record with geese. The native species around here is the Canada goose. They are ubiquitous and beautiful, especially when flying in their V formations, but often aren't a bird you want to anger, even accidentally. Trust me, I know. The nightmares continue, and be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.